790 Dragon Sports Talk Radio.
Sports Talk Radio.
The King, Robert Baratheon, injured in what was otherwise a bore of a game.
And shocking moves from Vulcan that show their prime directive is victory. It's all coming up on FSL tonight.
It was 3 a.m. when I heard the sound.
A shocking open in many ways to the 2012 season. Justin Robert Young, I'm Tom Merritt.
I have never seen, but before this week started, before even a single minute was played, this was the wildest off-season week we'd ever seen in the history of this league. There's nothing that even comes close to one of the stories, let alone the culmination of what happened. And then what happened on the field today, if it was possible, even wilder.
Now, we've got a lot to get to here, but I want to start with what was probably the most important news, although it's hard to pick a top story, but Coach Baratheon of the Lannisport Lions, and we'll get it out of the way, Lannisport won their game, but Coach Baratheon, severely injured late in the game, was leading a charge far from where a lot of people thought he was supposed to be in the middle ground. Far into the game when a lot of people thought he probably shouldn't have even been playing anymore, and taken to the hospital in critical condition.
This was not a competitive game. And we're going to get into a little bit later why this was not a competitive game against Winterfell, which a lot of people had circled on their calendars, these both being new teams to the league, natural rivals.
Westeros League rivals, exactly.
There's no reason why Robert Baratheon should have been on the field in what eventually turned into a laugher at 7-3. This was late in the game. He's in the woods, you know, just really doing nothing. He's kind of stumbling out there. He's obviously not taking things seriously. He might as well be drunk on the field, and he gets severely injured in what is an otherwise, you know, just. Very unfortunate accident.
And playing against the advice of Ned Stark. And you may ask, well, what is Ned Stark of the Winterfell Direwolves going to, you know, it's the opposite team, right?
Yeah.
Oh, no. That should have been the top story. Is in the off week, since we did our preview episode, there was a huge trade. Now, the Baratheon and Stark used to play together years ago.
Yeah.
In King's Landing. And Baratheon made what is a brilliant move, a very Lannister-like move.
Well, this doesn't happen unless you have the gold of Casterly Rock behind you. There is a very special, you know, relationship between the Baratheons and the Lannisters, not only because of the marriage, but also because there's just, you know, the boldness of Robert Baratheon combined with the will to win of the Lannisters is something that pulled off the most insane trade that's ever happened in this league, Tom.
This is the kind of trade that people are talking about in their fantasy leagues, not in real leagues.
This is not even fantasy. This is third graders are talking to them. They're swapping baseball cards.
Eddard Stark, the captain of the Winterfell Direwolves, traded to the Lannisport Lions on the eve of their first game against each other for Gendry Blacksmith, an unknown. A lot of people didn't understand why he was even on the Lannisport lineup in the first place.
Don't even get in my face with this Gendry's a hot young prospect. Gendry's got a lot of tools. He's, you know, he does some great work. Listen, I'm sure he's dedicated to his craft, okay? Gendry times 50 is not worth Ned Stark. Ned Stark might be the best player in this league. He was an MVP candidate, and he goes to Lannisport for a song.
Well, for Gendry and cash and a song.
Yeah.
I think they may have sent a song, actually, but they sent a lot of cash. That's the only way this happens. And Robb Stark now takes over as captain of the Winterfell Direwolves. You see a lot of other shuffling. Bran Stark is now the big man, and we should get to that. Probably playing above his head. Probably playing in a way in a position that he shouldn't have been in the first place, against all advice. But injured in an incredible run-in with Jaime Lannister early in this game. No word on his status for week two.
obviously, and there's a reason why Winterfell was a dark horse to really make some noise this season. A lot of it was because of their bench. When you have a solid player like Eddard Stark, followed up with Robb Stark, the Young Wolf, and listen, he's going to make a fine captain. Not this season, but he will eventually, I think, play to his potential. And for Bran, he's just like his brother. He's built just like his brother. Obviously, a few years younger. There was no, limit to the heights he could climb in this league. And yet, unfortunately, he comes crashing to earth after just a violent exchange with, the Kingslayer himself. And a lot of chatter on whether or not it was a dirty hit. You know,
that is a reputation that's followed Jaime Lannister around for a long time.
Obviously, he's a chippy player. You know, there's no doubt about that. And he obviously doesn't care about anybody who's not named Lannister. I mean, I can't even help to think the things that he would not do for love.
So we've got Hodor in there as your big man for the rest of this game. That explains your 7-3 score. And with the game 7-1 late, you see Coach Baratheon out there, as you mentioned, just almost an embarrassment to the Lannisport Lions, rubbing it in Winterfell's face after taking Stark.
Yeah.
And then there was talk that Sansa and Arya were also going to come over.
It's an absolute mess. I mean, listen, if you read any of the comments from Catelyn Stark, Eddard's wife, this was not a popular move amongst that franchise. God knows why Eddard signed off on it. He has tremendous sway in that organization. And, by all accounts from him, this is only a temporary thing. He will eventually be back on the Winterfell.
Wait a minute. Hold on, we are just getting breaking news here, and I want to double check this before I pass this along. We got confirmation. We've got this is for real. This coming from Lancel Lannister. A report has just been given, and we actually have some recording here. Robert Baratheon has passed away.
Oh, wow!
The king is dead.
Wow.
I don't know what to say. We're a little, this is sports. This is supposed to be fun. And something like this is a rare happening. It's a sad happening. And that's going to leave... What a horrible way to start a season.
This is the most impactful game that has ever been played in this league. And the legacy of Robert Baratheon is one that cannot be measured. To lose his life on the field in a game like this, obviously he died as he lived. You know, he always wanted to go out on the field. Unfortunately, it's we offer our condolences to his family. Now, Tom, I'm seeing here on the monitor that we do have a soundbite that has just been transmitted to us from his wife, Cersei Lannister. Let's go to that now.
Yeah, responding to a question, to my way of thinking, this is a rather insensitive question of whether if he had been playing in the middle ground, the hit might have been not so bad. But I haven't heard this yet. Let's hear what Cersei Baratheon had to say in the wake of her husband and coach's death.
When you play the Game of Thrones, you win or you die. There is no middle ground.
Whoa.
Listen, I'm not... We
not what I expected to hear.
We deal with a lot of cultures in this league, and this is what the FSL is all about. Is there are a lot of different value systems. This... You might, for a human like Cersei Lannister, expect to hear something maybe a little bit more warm. But the Lannisters are, I can't imagine to say the grief that they're going through and the way that they're going to process this loss. It's wow. I'm still processing for me. I mean, I can't imagine that we're never going to see Robert Baratheon on that field again, you know.
So we have got a power vacuum at the top of the Lannisport Lions. I don't mean to be crass, but Robert Baratheon was the captain. He was the coach. Who do you put in there now? Tywin Lannister, the general manager, has got Eddard Stark. recently acquired Eddard Stark. He's got Joffrey Baratheon, the big man, frankly didn't look that good in this game.
No.
And you've got Cersei Lannister, who obviously has her own feelings on the subject.
Without getting too insensitive, and obviously we are only minutes away from hearing that Robert Baratheon is in fact dead. If you were just joining us right now, that just came in officially on the wire. The natural fit would be Eddard Stark. He has leadership. He brings a lot of the same things to the table that Robert Baratheon did. I'll tell you what, if you want to know what Eddard Stark can do by himself, you can just, check the game tape against the Targaryens, and all those, legendary battles. He was always, the leadership and the backbone, a lot of times more so than even now the late Robert the King Baratheon. So
I tell you what, I've got word from the programmers here at Dragon Sports Talk Radio. They're already furiously working to put together some highlights, just like those kind of highlights you're talking about, to be run later in the day. So we'll keep you updated on that. Meanwhile, there were three other games that we need to talk about.
Yeah.
And let's move on to the next one. Vulcan at Mordor. Mordor now in the East, opening up against their cross division rivals, Vulcan, and they did not look good in this game at all. However,
we'll
get to how this is not going to be the same team, literally not the same team next week. But before we get to that, talk about this game, Mordor. As we expected, crushing the Velocity. Well, Mordor as we expected winning, but crushing? Did we expect that?
What you want to see in game ones, and it's hard to read a lot into game ones because, and especially with some of the teams that we're going to talk about, specifically Arrakis, it's hard to judge how the players are going to come together, how all that chemistry is ultimately going to work. But for Vulcan, which was by and large the same team that happened last season, with Mordor, who had some shuffling in leadership positions, but is by and large the same culture, you can read a little bit more into it. And if what we read in this show between me and you, Tom, is the same thing that T'Pau read, which is that her squad is the same squad that choked away that lead last season. Her squad doesn't step up when the times are at their darkest and makes the decisions that need to be made. There was a long way to go. Mordor exposed that, and boy, did she make a big change at the end of this? And this is, again, if we didn't have the four other stories that we just talked about, this is a story of the year contender.
Yeah, this is an insane week one. The one thing I will say before we finish up talking about the actual 6-1 loss for the Vulcan Velocity is that Spock did not look like the same Spock. He was not measured. He was volatile. He was inconsistent. He was not himself.
No.
And nobody could figure out why. Staun, the rookie on defense, played a fairly good game, but did not seem to cooperate with Spock. They seemed at odds through this entire game.
Spock, to say Spock looked distracted and unfocused on what is probably
uncharacteristically unfocused.
Absolutely. Listen, the Vulcan Velocity, and it's hard to get excited about Vulcan. They are obviously a team that is, they're not sexy. They're not the Serenity Valley Fireflies where every crossword is its own little tempest in a teapot. They're a state team, but that was not the case today. Spock and Staun, I thought they were going to come to blows.
It was very close, but let's get to the actual post-game news. T'Pau signing two humans.
Okay.
Outside the system, as we speculated on in the preview episode.
And we said outside the system. I rightfully over the last week got a lot of guff for saying, maybe that T'Pau was an outside the box enough thinker to sign players from anywhere in the galaxy. Throw out the Vulcan courtesy manual and just say, where are the, where is the talent that we need to get us to the next level?
She goes to the San Francisco Federation, a team whose coaching job she has refused to take.
The only person ever.
And signs James T. Kirk and Leonard McCoy. So now the lineup for Vulcan next week is Spock at captain, Kirk as your big man, McCoy as your utility, and Staun on the bench.
It obviously solves a lot of problems. Number one, Spock is a old friend. Some have said that he always and always will be Kirk's friend. Bones is a part of that troika. Leonard
Bones McCoy.
Yeah,
the new utility
Bones
man.
Bones McCoy is, he's a doctor out there. He's running a clinic when he's on his game. This is an insane move, and it bumps Staun onto the bench, which is where he belongs, because him and Spock just obviously don't get along. Do you know how hard you have to work to not get along with a Vulcan?
It's really crazy. Obviously, this move meant to stabilize Spock, bringing in some folks that they think he'll get along with, maybe temper some of his emotional and moody behavior this season. And in the post-game press conference, that was very obvious, as T'Pau actually pushed Spock in front of the mic to take credit for the signings.
Forcing him to assume leadership on this.
Let's take a listen.
He names these outworlders friends. How does he pledge their behavior?
With my life, T'Pau.
Spock chose his friends well.
Well, obviously, Spock didn't really choose these friends, but I guess he chose them to be his friends. And
well, I mean,
he's pledging with his life. Again, a little uncharacteristically emotional.
We don't know what goes on behind the scenes of this team. It's very clear.
This
after
locker room
this
is
move,
a closed door.
It's,
yeah.
It very much is a closed door. It's very clear that this move doesn't happen unless Spock has T'Pau's ear and has a tremendous amount of influence as a captain. And, because these guys don't get pulled in by T'Pau just randomly. It's on Spock's recommendation. And so she basically puts him in the position to say, listen, if these are your boys, you have to vouch for your fleet.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, we'll see them next week against Coruscant and find out how Vulcan looks differently against a resurgent Coruscant Emperor. We did not anticipate this. Coruscant defeating Serenity Valley 4-2.
Coruscant obviously is in a rebuilding year. They very much are putting together what they hope to be a very potent team, an offense that is more devastating than the one they hoped to put on the field last season. But again, you cannot have a game that features the Serenity Valley Fireflies, even in a loss, that doesn't talk about the Serenity Valley Fireflies. Jane's back. Mal's here. Second
this was their
verse.
First. Yeah.
Same as the first.
Exactly. First reunion of these two since the falling out when Jane Cobb left for the Canton Janes, became a league champion, and then immediately lost a team as they were kicked out of the league. He came back, some say crawling. I guess those some would be Malcolm Reynolds.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I'm not going to pretend. Okay. If I can't understand Cersei Lannister and how she processes her guilt, and I can't understand how T'Pau brings in two Outworlders on what has previously only been a Vulcan team, the concept of why Malcolm Reynolds and Jane Cobb are in 5 feet of each other at any moment is absolutely mind-blowing to me. Here's the story, folks. It's 2-2 going in with 5 minutes left in the game. Jane makes a move that won him a championship. Let me be clear on this. Jane is a champion, an FSL champion, something that Mal is not, something that the Serenity Valley Fireflies are not. He makes a solo move that unfortunately draws double coverage, leaving Mal absolutely wide open on the other side of the field. Now, when he was on the Mudders, when he, by the way, won a championship with the Mudders, This is what he did. He drew double coverage. He scored anyway.
Well, but that was a different team. He did not have Washburn. He did not have Zoe. He did not have Malcolm Reynolds. He had to play that way for the Canton Jays.
He did. And this is the problem. This is why I can't imagine why they brought him back on this team. The ball doesn't go to Mal. It stays in Jane's hand. He's stopped. Coruscant goes right back down the field. It's a goal. Two goals, success, a goal right after that, two goal or another goal to follow, and this game is in the books. Malcolm Reynolds and Jane Cobb bickering on the sidelines for all the world to see, and now we got to go another week talking about whether or not this is a team that can actually go anywhere when we just did this last season.
The craziness of week one continues in Rivendell at Arrakis. Rivendell wins this one in a nail biter, 5-4. But I tell you what, the fellowship looked good, showing some hope for this season.
Wow. In a week that was absolutely defined by the inability for teams to find chemistry, you really saw a hardening of cause and determination against the most diverse squad in the entire FSL. There's a lot of cultures represented amongst the fellowship, but boy, they looked fantastic in a hard-fought game against Arrakis, which showed a lot of promise, right, Tom?
Absolutely. I mean, this team is still getting used to new surroundings. It's a whole new lineup. They haven't been playing in the Arrakeen Arena before. The entire team was moved. So they are settling in. It's a little rocky, but I have to say, 5-4 is not damning. This team looks like they could turn into something big later this season.
Absolutely. There's a lot of players on this team that I think have a greater purpose that will be defined later in this season.
Let's take a look at week two coming up next week. Winterfell at Rivendell. I've got to give the favor to Rivendell after the way they looked in week one. And the Winterfell possibly not having Bran Stark, definitely not having Eddard Stark.
I mean, half their team's gone. I mean, I've been on the record saying I'm about as big of a Robb Stark fan as you can be. I think he's an absolute player in this league, but it's hard to look at that Rivendell lineup against that Winterfell lineup and say, number one, who's even on Winterfell? Who even knows who's going to be in Winterfell after we stop talking when the mics are off? It's an absolute mess up in the north. And listen, I know that, listen, the north remembers. It's always going to be there. There always will be a Stark in Winterfell. I just think that what looked to be a competitive team this season just doesn't exist anymore. And Rivendell's a team on the make.
Yeah, this is a team at the beginning of their road looking good. Winterfell, it's hard to see them keeping their house in order for the rest of this season.
Dude, this is going to be like afternoonsies for Rivendell. This is going to be easy.
Arrakis at Lannisport. I would have easily favored Lannisport, but in the wake of the death of their coach, depending on the moves that Tywin Lannister makes to fill that void, how are they going to face up against a team that looked a little shaky, but will now have had another week to get used to playing together?
If this were any other human team, this were Winterfell, let's say. If this were Winterfell and Eddard Stark had fallen in the first, game of the year, I think you see a bigger problem. But there is no humans on, certainly in the Westerosi League, and I don't think in the FSL, that are more focused on winning than Lannisport. If you, from step one to, or from your first position to the last guy on the bench, it's no secret that Cersei Lannister is a keen believer that anybody not named Lannister is an enemy. And I think that if even for Baratheon to go down, this will be a rallying point to them. And let's not forget, they added somebody that can do a lot of the same things that Robert Baratheon did. And they're not going to be, I think this one is going to be a Lannisport win.
Your best bet, Cersei Lannister, right? It's got to take over, at least as captain.
Certainly. I mean, I think she has, no lack of ambition to do so. You really don't have to poke her too hard to get an opinion out of her. It's going to be interesting. And I think from everything that we've heard from their official mouthpiece, Lancel, you know, she's ready to take charge.
He has a lot of nice things to say about her. For
absolutely.
Sure. Mordor at Serenity Valley. And
a lot of love in that family.
Mordor at Serenity Valley, I don't even want to talk about, frankly. It's not going to be worth watching.
Well, it's always worth watching when it's Serenity Valley. They might get smoked.
Well, that's right. You might see some off-the-field antics, but Mordor's going to smoke them.
Well,
I mean, they've got to straighten out their issues, and Mordor doesn't look any more vulnerable than it did last season.
The question is, will Mal punch Jane on the field this game or next game? Although, listen, there, when you look at that team and you look at Serenity Valley's firepower, there's a reason why they brought Jane back. They didn't just bring him back for the headaches. They brought him back to understand with these problems, we can get over them if we can get Mal and Jane going. If they are scoring at the clip that they should be, they can beat any team in the league, including Mordor. You want to know what? This team, I have no idea what the hell they're doing, but I'm gonna say Serenity Valley in an upset.
Okay, you're nuts. That's one of those one in a million, and you'll look like a genius if it turns out to be.
Well, but like, listen, is Mordor all that good? I mean,
yes,
Vulcan looks like garbage.
Mordor is unstoppable.
Vulcan, if you play, so you're telling me this, and we'll see it later in the season, but if Mordor played Vulcan with Kirk, with Bones McCoy, do you think it's, I mean, it's certainly closer than the final today, 6-1.
Sure. No, I think
they have a shot.
I think Lannisport might give Mordor a run for their money, but that's the only team right now that's got it together enough to really
Me Mordor play somebody that's good, and then I'll tell you how good Mordor is.
Finally, Coruscant at Vulcan, the newly humanized Vulcan. After this week, I'm going to give the edge to Coruscant, but I wouldn't be shocked if the Velocity do pull it together with these shakeups from T'Pau.
I'm not going to put the pressure on Vulcan to win right out of the gate. You get a lot of players that are going to get used to the system. And okay, if we're going to talk about players like Jane Cobb, we're going to talk about strong-headed leaders like Robert Baratheon, you know, God's rest his soul. There is no more strong-headed leader in the FSL now than James Tiberius Kirk. This is a guy who marches to his own drum, okay? This is, you know, he is, and we'll go into this. Listen, we would have spent the entire episode talking.
But you got to remember, he's on the sidelines for this one. He's not leading this team. He's filling in. He's not the champion yet.
Okay, so you're going to tell me that James T. Kirk is going to be on a team that he's not going to be center stage on?
He's going to have to come to blows with Spock before he gets named well, the leader here.
I mean, listen, we'll see how that shakes out, but I'll tell you what, failure is not an option for James T. Kirk.
That is very true. All right, we're getting the word. There will be a special retrospective on the reign of Robert Baratheon coming up.
Getting word in now, the title to that, and this is going to be a very special presentation, is Warhammer Falls Silent, Robert Baratheon, a retrospective.
Absolutely. Stay tuned for that. And thank you, folks, for tuning in to FSL tonight. Here's to a cheerier week 2. We'll see you then.
See you.